Well, good morning, everyone. If I can get this mask off and be able to start to breathe again. It's actually hotter in here. I guess it's warmer outside now with spring coming. I started off this morning with a first world problem. I'm, you know, happy that Brother Jeremy brought to our attention the third world problem. You'd imagine that 50% of Christadelphians live in Africa. And the numbers are staggering, really. In Malawi, they have, on the report that we received, welfare aid needed for 2,800 people. To put this into context for our community, the southern region is where 150 of 172 Malawian ecclesias are based. The membership of, I know you've read all this, the membership of approximately 8,000. Malawian area elders have requested food aid from CDM Welfare for around a third of all members of Malawi from 111 different ecclesias. And, of course, it makes us all realize how, I'm going to say small and insignificant we are. Or my first world problem when I got up and tried to print my notes, and I couldn't find the file in my computer software. Couldn't find it anywhere. And then realized that the software company, WordPerfect, I'll just say that now so you know, wants me to upgrade again, and this time they want $350. So I've been ignoring them. And they do this, I think, to get my attention. Things happen overnight. My desktop looks different in the morning. So it's amazing, isn't it? We bother over such small things. Although if I wrote my notes or my exhortation, I wouldn't be able to read a word of it. So it's just as well that we can print it. So let's turn our minds to the Gospel of Mark, which we've been reading over the last 10 days or so. Now, my expositor's Bible commentary pays this tribute to Mark's gospel. The Gospel of Mark is a succinct, unadorned, yet vivid account of the ministry, suffering, death, and resurrection of Jesus. The Gospel of Mark is a succinct, unadorned, yet vivid account of the ministry, suffering, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Mark presents the narrative in an appealing way, for he tells the good news about Jesus so simply that a child can understand it. It is generally agreed that the gospel is an eyewitness account, which certainly helps, doesn't it? And that Mark left his signature in chapter 14, verse 51, when the young man followed him with nothing but a linen cloth about his body, and they seized him, and he left the linen cloth and ran away naked. Jesus lived and worked in Nazareth. And Matthew helps us to introduce the gospel when he says that, but Jesus worked and living in Nazareth, left Nazareth and went to live in Capernaum by the sea in the territory of Zebulun and Naphtali. Left Nazareth and moved to Capernaum by the sea in the territory of Zebulun and Naphtali. Now, this, of course, is in fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy in chapter 9. And there will be no gloom for her who is in anguish. In the former time, he brought into contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. In the latter time, he made glorious the way of the sea and beyond, the land beyond Jordan and Galilee of the nations. And in this spectacular fulfillment of Isaiah's prophecy, we come to the first part of Mark. And Mark is a summary up to chapter 9 or 10 or 12 of many of these events that took place in the northern part of Jesus' ministry. Mark 1, verse 21 to 28, Jesus heals a man with an unclean spirit in the synagogue. And they went into Capernaum, where Jesus was living, and immediately on the Sabbath he entered the synagogue and was teaching. And they were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one who had authority, as one of the scribes. And immediately there was in their synagogue a man with an unclean spirit, and he cried out, "What have you to do with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God." But Jesus rebuked him, saying, "Be silent and come out of him." And the unclean spirit, convulsing him and crying out with a loud voice, came out of him. And they were all amazed. And at once his fame spread everywhere throughout all the surrounding region of Galilee. Mark 1, verse 29 to 34. And immediately he left the synagogue. This would be the synagogue in Capernaum. And he entered the house of Simon and Andrew, who happened to live in Capernaum as well, and James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law lay ill with a fever, and immediately they told him about her. And he came and took her by the hand and lifted her up, and the fever left her, and she began to serve them. That evening in Capernaum, at sundown, they brought to him all who were sick or oppressed by demons, and the whole city was gathered together at the door. And he healed many who were sick with various diseases and cast out many demons. Mark 1, verse 40 to 45, Jesus cleanses a leper. After a preaching tour in Galilee, a leper came to him imploring him, and kneeling said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said, "I will, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him, and he was made clean. Mark 2, verse 1 to 12, Jesus heals a paralytic in Capernaum. And when he returned to Capernaum after many days, it was reported that he was at home, back home to Capernaum. And many were gathered together so that there was no room, not even at the door, and he was preaching the word to them. And they came, bringing to him a paralytic carried by four men, and when they could not get near because of the crowd, they removed the roof tile above him, and when they had made an opening, they let him down in a bed on which the paralytic lay. "I say to you," said Jesus, "rise, pick up your bed and go home." And he rose and immediately picked up his bed and went before them, so that they were all amazed and glorified God, saying, "We never saw anything like this." This, again, is in Capernaum, where Jesus lived. Mark 3, verse 1 to 6, Jesus heals a man with a withered hand, probably at Capernaum. Again, he entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand, and he watched, and they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. He said to the man with the withered hand, "Come here, stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was healed. Mark 4, 35 to 41, Jesus calms a storm. On that day, when evening had come, he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side." And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking over the boat, so that the boat was already filling with water. But he was in the stern, asleep on a cushion. And he woke him and said to him, "Master, do you not care that we are perishing?" And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, "Peace, be still." And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. Mark 5, 1 to 13, Jesus heals a man with a demon. And they came to the other side of the sea, as you see there, to the country of the Gadarenes, the Gerasenes. And when Jesus had stepped out of the boat, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit. He lived among the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. And often he had been bound with shackles and chains, but he wrenched the chains apart, and he broke the shackles in pieces. No one had the strength to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and on the mountains, he was always crying out and cutting himself with stones. And Jesus commanded the unclean spirits to come out and enter the pigs that were grubbing on the hillside. And the herd, numbering about 2,000, rushed down the steep bank into the sea and were drowned. Jesus heals a woman and Jairus' daughter, Mark 5, verse 21 to 43. And when Jesus had crossed again in the boat to the other side, a great crowd gathered about him, and he was beside the sea. Then came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and seeing him, he fell at his feet and implored him earnestly, saying, "My little daughter is at the point of death. Come and lay your hands on her so that she may be made well and live." And he went with him. But while he was going, of course, a great crowd gathered around Jesus, thronging around him. And there was a woman there who had a blood disorder for 12 years. And she had suffered much from many physicians and spent all that she had and was no better, but rather worse. She had heard the reports about Jesus and came up behind him in the crowd and touched his garment. For she said, "If I touch even his garments, I will be made well." And immediately the blood issue was resolved. She felt in her body that she'd been healed from the disease. But in the meantime, while this was going on, the rich man's daughter, Jairus' daughter, had evidently died. While he was still speaking, there came from the ruler's house one who said, "Your daughter is dead. Why trouble a teacher any further?" And Jesus finally comes back and says, "She's not dead. She's just sleeping." They laughed at Jesus, of course. But taking her by the hand and said to her, "Talitha kumai," which means, "Little girl, I say to you, arise." And immediately the girl got up and began walking, for she was about 12 years old. And they were immediately overcome with amazement. Mark chapter 6, verse 30 to 44. Jesus feeds the 5,000. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. He began to teach them many things, and when it was late, and there was just 5 loaves and 2 fishes available for food, he commanded them all to sit down on the ground on the green grass. And taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and said a blessing and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples who sat before the people. And he divided the 2 fish among them all, and they all ate and were satisfied. And he took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces. And those who ate were about 5,000 men. Mark 6, verse 45, Jesus walks on the water. In the midst of the raging storm, about the 4th watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. And when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought he was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. And immediately he spoke to them and said, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." And he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased, and they were utterly astounded. Mark 6, verse 45 to 56, Jesus heals the sick in Gennesaret. And when they had crossed over, and you see in the text, they're crossing back and forth across the Sea of Galilee. When they had crossed over, they came to the land of Gennesaret and moored at the shore. And when they got out of the boat, the people immediately recognized him and ran about the whole region and began to bring the sick people on their beds to wherever they heard he was. And whenever he came, in villages, cities, or countryside, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and implored him that they might touch even the fringe of his garment. And many, as touched, it were made well. Mark 7, verse 24 to 30, a Syrophoenician woman's faith, way up in Tyre and Sidon, as you'll see at the top end of the map. They entered a house, and from there he arose and went to Tyre and Sidon, and he did not want anyone to know that he was there. But immediately a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit heard of him and came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Gentile. Remember this. This is the light to the Gentiles, a Syrophoenician by birth. And she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And he said to her, "Let the children first be fed, for it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." But she answered him, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs." And he said to her, "For this statement, you may go your way. The demon has left your daughter." And she went home and found the child lying in bed and the demon gone. Mark 7, verse 31 to 37, Jesus heals a deaf man. Then he returned from the region of Tyre, comes down through Sidon to the Sea of Galilee, to the region of the Decapolis. And they brought to him a man who was deaf and had a speech impediment. And they begged him to lay his hand on him. And taking him aside from the crowd, privately, he put his fingers into his ears, and after spitting, touched his tongue, and looked up to heaven, he sighed and said, "Ephphatha," that is, "be opened," and his eyes were opened, his ears were opened, he's a deaf man. His eyes were opened, his tongue was released, and he spoke plainly. Mark 8, verse 1 to 10, Jesus feeds 4,000 people. Mark 9, verse 14 to 19, in our readings this morning, that Jesus heals a boy with an unclean spirit. And someone from the crowd answered, "Teacher, I brought my son to you, and he has a spirit that makes him mute." And after some interchange, Jesus saw that the crowd came running together. He rebuked the unclean spirit, saying to it, "You mute and deaf spirit, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again." And after crying out and convulsing him terribly, it came out, and the boy was like a corpse, so that most of them said, "He is dead." But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him up, and he arose. Mark chapter 8, verse 11 to 13. The Pharisees, we need to just slow down a bit here. The Pharisees demanded a sign. The Pharisees came and began to argue with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven to test him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, "Why does this generation seek a sign? They've already seen about 100 of them all around them." Mark 8, verse 22, Jesus heals a blind man at Bethsaida. And they came to Bethsaida, and some people brought to him a blind man and begged him to touch him. And he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the village. And when he had spit in his eyes and laid his hands on them, he asked, "Do you see anything?" And he looked up and said, "I see people." And they looked like trees walking. And Jesus laid his hands on his eyes again, and he opened his eyes. His sight was restored, and he saw everything clearly. And he sent him home and said, "Do not even enter the village." Jesus was in Caesarea Philippi, which is right up at the top, I think, of the map. Mark 8, verse 27. And Jesus went on with his disciples to the village of Caesarea Philippi, and on the way he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they told him, "John the Baptist." And others said, "Elijah." And others, "One of the prophets." And he asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Christ, the Messiah." He strictly charged them to tell no one about it. In Caesarea Philippi, way up north, Peter makes his confession that Jesus was actually the Messiah. And he believed it, I'm sure. And so right after that, Jesus foretells his death and resurrection. Mark 8, verse 31. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders and the chief priests and the scribes and be killed, and after 3 days arise again. And he said this plainly. But Peter, who had just confessed that Jesus was the Messiah, took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and seeing his disciples, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of men." Mark 8, verse 34, Jesus speaks the words of life. Now, he just told them in verse 31, he gave them four words, at least in English: suffer, rejected, killed, rise again. Simple stuff. Suffer, rejected, killed, rise again. Verse 34, and calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, "If anyone would come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed of when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. He said to them, truly I say to you, there are some standing here who will not taste death till they see the kingdom of God. And in verse 13 of Mark 9 that we read this morning, Jesus is transfigured before them. Transfigured, what does it mean? I suspect to me it means that Jesus didn't look like he had looked to this point. Jesus probably looked like Jesus looks like in the first chapter of Revelation. This was a very different Jesus. And after 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up to a high mountain. The map says Mount Tabor, I think, in the north in Galilee. He was transfigured before them, and his clothes became radiant, intensely white, as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to him Moses and Elijah, and they were talking to Jesus. And Peter said to Jesus, Rabbi, it is good that we are here. Let us make three tents, one for you and one for Moses and one for Elijah. For he did not know what to say, and they were terrified. And a cloud overshadowed them, and a voice came out of the cloud, this is my beloved Son. Listen to him. And again, in Mark 9, verse 30, Jesus foretells his death. They went on from there and passed through Galilee, and he did not want anyone to know, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, the Son of Man is going to be delivered into the hands of men, and they will kill him, and when he is killed, after 3 days he will rise. But they did not understand the saying, and were afraid to ask. What were they doing, of course, in verse 33, when they came to Capernaum, arguing about who would be the greatest? But they kept silent after Jesus asked them, so what were you talking about on the way? Because on the way they had argued with one another about who would be the greatest. And he sat down and called the 12, and he said to them, if anyone would be first, he must be last of all and servant of all. And he took a child and put him in the midst of them, and taking him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one such child in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives not me, but him who sent me. Mark 6, going back a few chapters, verse 1, Jesus was rejected at Nazareth. He went away from there and came to his hometown, Nazareth, and his disciples followed him. And on the Sabbath, he began to teach in the synagogue, and many who heard him were astonished, saying, where did this man get these things? What is the wisdom given to him? How are such mighty works done by his hand? Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary, the brother of James and John and Judas and Simon? And are not his sisters here with us? And they took offense at him. They took offense at him. Now this wasn't the first time he'd been there performing miracles and teaching, but they took offense at him. And Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and among his relatives and his own household. And he could not do many mighty works there, except that he laid his hands on a few sick folks and healed them. And he marveled because of their unbelief. Mark 10, 32 to 34, Jesus foretells his death a third time. And they were on the road going to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. And they were amazed, and those who followed were afraid. And taking the 12 again, he began to tell them what was about to happen to him, saying, see, we are going to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be delivered over to the chief priests and the scribes, and they shall condemn him to death and deliver him over to the Gentiles. And will mock him and spit on him and flog him and kill him. And after 3 days, he will rise. We have to go to Matthew chapter 11, verse 20, for kind of the tragic end piece of this amazing, miraculous mission of light in Galilee, the way of the Gentiles. Jesus rebukes the unrepentant cities and began to denounce the cities where most of his mighty works had been done. because they did not repent. Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the mighty works had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth. But I tell you, it would be more bearable on the day of judgment for Tyre and Sidon than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you be exalted to heaven? You will be brought down to Hades. For if the mighty works done in you had been done in Sodom, Sodom would have remained until this day. But I tell you that it will be more tolerable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom than for you. Wow, what an indictment to the folks from his own community. The land where he lived, around Galilee. The folks in the cities that he met and healed and preached to. So Jesus laments the unrepentant hearts of his own people, his own neighbors. Jesus also wept over the unrepentant, rejecting rulers of Jerusalem, where he was now going. So, brothers and sisters, this is us. This is our inheritance. This is our life. We are the Gentiles who have seen the light. Do we live and walk in that light of his presence? Because this is our journey. This is the reality of our journey. Do we see the miracle? Do we believe in all the mighty works done by our Lord among us? Do we understand that being associated with the entourage of Jesus must lead to the cross of sacrifice? Do we understand that being associated with the entourage of Jesus must lead to the cross of sacrifice? Are we afraid to ask Jesus the important questions? Are we so blind that in the midst of this great miracle of light to the nations, we still want to ask Jesus to show us a sign? Or do we feel the excitement of the crowds at Gennesaret pressing forward when all who touched him were made whole? Or do we ignore or minimalize or trivialize the power that can save us? Have we wandered the streets of Chorazin going about our business, but unimpressed by Jesus walking by? Have we shopped at the fish markets of Bethsaida, equally unimpressed by the miracle happening around us? Like the creative power of the Lord feeding 5,000 nearby, or marveled at the healing of the blind man in Bethsaida, or at Capernaum, when the paralytic was let down through the roof and heard these words of Jesus, "I say to you, rise, pick up your bed, and go home." Do we understand and believe? Or Nazareth, Jesus' hometown. When we hear the words of life, are we offended by the teachings and miracles of Mary's son, Jesus, the carpenter? Have we, as we have seen in our readings this morning, been to the mountaintop with Jesus? Or do we spend our time bickering with one another about who is the greatest, or living in the denial of Peter? "This will never happen to you, Lord." Not facing the reality. Not realizing that the Galilee ministry of miracle and light will end in Jerusalem. Do we realize that this ministry of light must come to a blood-stained cross on Calvary? That's the big question. "If anyone would come after me," said Jesus, "let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what can a man give in return for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with all the holy angels." Mark 8:34. Yes, this is us, brothers and sisters. This is all our reality, all of the above that we've spoken about. And we come to remember it today in bread and wine. Amen.